The reading this morning shall come from Ephesians, the fifth chapter. That's Ephesians, the fifth chapter. And I shall begin reading with the 22nd verse. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husband as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husband, love your wife, even as Christ also loved the church, and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourished and cherished it, even as the Lord the church. But we are members of the body, of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverends her husband.
Thank you, Brother Tommy, for reading that passage from Ephesians for us to set the tone of our lesson this morning, the subject of selecting a mate. Not everyone in this assembly will, of course, be directly affected by a lesson of this nature, but it's time for us to talk about those things again and to make sure that we remind ourselves of some important values concerning that subject, because roughly 9 out of 10 people do get married. And preparation is made for everything under the sun. Sometimes preparation is not made as it needs to be made for the marriage relationship. There are distorted views in our society, even among religious people, about how to go about selecting someone to be your companion for life. Hollywood seems to be setting the standards for a lot of people in our nation, and how tragic that is, because those in Hollywood seem to, even though they get a lot of publicity, they seem to be people who are not very interested in spiritual things and things that we read about in our Bibles. I think probably we could safely say, and everyone would probably agree, that choosing a marriage companion would be the second most important decision that you make in your life. The first one being to become a Christian, of course. In some countries of the world, parents still arrange marriages for their children. That is a strange concept in America, isn't it? There was a young man from India and India is a country where they have arranged marriages, arranged by the parents. And the young man was being questioned about, did he feel somewhat cheated because he didn't get to fully participate and make his own decision about who his wife would be? And his reply was somewhat shocking to people that have been raised in this country. He said, I wouldn't want the heavy responsibility of making that type of decision, because marriage is for life. And who better to rely upon than my parents, who have my best interest at heart? divorce in India amounts to about 1.1% of marriages, whereas in the United States it amounts to about 45% of marriages. We're talking about a very important thing because it's a lifelong decision. It's a choice for a lifelong companion. The Bible says in Matthew 9 and verse 6, the second part of that verse, "What therefore God hath joined together, let not man separate." And in Romans 7 and verse 2, "For the married woman is bound by the law to her husband while he is living. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law of her husband." So there are some principles that would help us, I think, in a subject as serious as this one is. And I think first and foremost, probably, to think about choosing someone who has a God-given right to be married. We won't be considering the situation of where to reconcile because we're assuming that we're talking to and about a situation where people have not been married before, primarily to our young people. But it's important for us because we live in a day of easy divorce. It is important for us to know who has a God-given right to be married and who does not. In the first place, I would suggest to you that you seek someone who has never been married before. From Matthew 19 and verses 4 and 5, or Hebrews 13 and verse 4, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 9 and 28, these scriptures that are provided for you on the back of the family matters, if you would study these and look carefully at these, choose someone who has not been married before. Or you could choose someone whose mate has died. They would be an acceptable candidate for marriage according to Romans 7. Or one who has put away their mate because they were unfaithful according to Matthew 9 and verse 9. But there's some caution here that you need to think about very carefully because there is a question of wisdom there. And sometimes the claim is not true. And some may have deceive themselves into thinking they have a right to marry, where in actuality they do not. 3 of 4 people who are divorced marry again. They frequent the places where singles frequent so that they can meet people and marry again. And sometimes, most of the time, these people marry people who have not been married before. Even when problems arise, you need to recognize that marriage in the eyes of God is for life. Matthew 19 and Romans 7. So as you consider some principles that might be beneficial for you, you are looking for one. You are looking for that single one. And the duration that you have in mind as you look is for life. So you can afford to be particular about who you select. And you can afford to take plenty of time. Because important decisions would, rightfully, wouldn't you think, require for you to think very carefully, to take your time, and to be particular. If you are looking for the very best, then you will have a limited number of people to pick from, I would think. Wouldn't you? And remember, good marriages are made from good materials. You can't have a good marriage made from bad materials, just like you can't have a good house made from defective lumber and defective bricks. So keep that in mind as an important consideration as well. Choose one who has a God-given right to marry. Choose one who possesses good character. Now, that's just a common sense type of thing, but it's very important for us to think about. And, of course, that assumes that you have a good character. I wouldn't advise someone like some outlaw, some gang member, some John Gotti type figure, Al Capone type figure, to marry someone of good character, because that would spoil that person. So it assumes that you have a good character, you want to have a good character. So if that's true of you, choose someone who has a good character. Look on the inside of that person. What is in their heart? What is the content of their heart? What are they about? Really, what type of person is that? Look for inward beauty, the beauty of holiness that you worship in God. Look for that inner beauty in that person too. It's certainly not wrong to appreciate outward beauty. That's part of the creation of God. It's part of His mechanism among His created people that He loves to create things that help people to be attracted to one another and appreciate one another. It's not wrong to appreciate outward beauty, but you should not look at outward alone. If that's your sole criterion, then what happens years later when that outward beauty begins to diminish? Because beauty is not permanent. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain. Proverbs 31 and verse 30, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Before the flood, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful in our study that we had in the Bible class this morning from the book of Genesis. The descendants of Cain, the wicked part of the men's family tree, and because they were beautiful, they took wives of these ungodly women, and it brought about such a wickedness that necessitated that God cleanse the earth with a huge flood in Genesis chapter 6. Consider the habits of the other person. Are they pleasant? That's an important consideration. Who are their companions? Who are their friends? Who do they associate with? Who do they spend time with? Because there's a principle in the New Testament that you will find to be true in your life, and that's in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. Who are their friends? Do they abuse substances? Do they drink? Do they curse? Do they smoke cigarettes? What sort of habits do they have? Have they spent time in jail? Are they an alcoholic or not? Have they abused children? Do they come from a family of child abuse? Are they jobless and not looking for a job and don't really want to work? It's important for us to remember, in spite of what the world tries to teach us, good character is not found in nightclubs. You won't find a person that would appreciate marriage like they should in those type of places. Is this person trustworthy? Is this person honest? Or does this person feel like it's okay to lie every once in a while? Those are important considerations for you. Does this person have moral convictions about things? Are they solid in their belief that righteousness is good and wickedness is bad? Do they try to live that way? Do they, as Romans 12 and verse 17 says, respect what is right in the sight of all men? Are they dependable? Can you depend on them when they say, yes, I will do something, or I will be at a place at a certain time? Can you depend on their words? Do they accept responsibility? Do they have a sense of obligation? I gave my word that I would do something, and I must do it to the very best of my ability, if at all possible. I must do that. Do they obey the laws of the land? Or do they flippantly disregard the laws that have been established by society for the good of society? Are they industrious? Or are they lazy and will not work? Because men should be pursuing the course in life that would allow them to provide for their families. They must do this, because if they don't, it is to deny the faith in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. Choose one with a good disposition, not someone who is arrogant and proud and lack of humility. That type of person you won't be able to reason with. You won't be able to lead and guide and show them the error of their way and have them accept it on a good basis. There'll always be some friction between you. How do they treat animals is a good question that you need to think about. Do they mistreat animals? You know, if they mistreat animals, it won't be very long before they mistreat human beings. And they might mistreat you. How do they treat animals? One good thing to gauge the acceptability of a marriage partner might be this. If you go to a restaurant somewhere, how do they treat the waitress? You can tell a lot by how someone treats a person that serves them in that type of setting. You can tell a lot about a person about how they treat people who serve them. How do they refer to people who are different than they are? Different in their education, different in their economic class, different in their race, different in a lot. How do they treat people who are different than they are? Do they make bad comments about people of a different education level or seemingly different class of society? It's important to gauge that. Are they a person who is selfish, egotistical? Emotional maturity does show up as selfishness sometimes. Do you want to be married to a person who is emotionally immature and egotistical? Is this person able to control temper? Watch for the warning signs. If a guy takes his fist when he's mad at you and slams the dashboard of his car and breaks it into pieces, that ought to be a big red flag for you, that this person has a problem with anger and can't control himself. Are you willing to deal with that? Are you willing to risk being battered by someone who's angry because of your emotional attachment to them? Watch for those warning signs. Is this person kind? And is this person helpful, not only to you, but to other people? Is it there so that you can see that it's genuine? Is this person an understanding person with small children, with other people, not stubborn and not bullheaded about things? Does this person have a thankful attitude about it, him or her? Or do they live lives of ingratitude? Do they live lives of, I'm going to have things my way? How does this person handle problems and trials that come up in life? Because they will. They certainly will in a marriage. How does that person handle those type of situations? Look for that. Gauge that. See if that's there. And choose someone with whom you can be agreed about things. Amos 3 and verse 3 says, can two walk together except they be agreed? And you're going to be walking together for life if marriage is your intention. These things are important. Choose someone who possesses good character. Also, consider the background of a person, because it's important. Is their background similar to your background? Or is it vastly different? Because if it's vastly different, it's going to bring changes to you. And it's going to require a great deal of understanding on your part and sacrifice of things that you may hold to be precious and dear. It's not saying a marriage with a person like that will never work out. It's just saying you want to minimize the problems going in, on the front end, so you won't have to deal with all the baggage that comes with it later, because you'll have enough baggage to deal with if you choose someone according to all of these things. Are they similar? Are they different? Do you come from a poor background and this person comes from a wealthy background, or vice versa? Education backgrounds, social backgrounds, racial backgrounds, national backgrounds. Things are different. Can you handle those differences? Marry someone you know. Don't marry someone that you don't know. And you don't know a person if you date them for 2 months and decide you want to get married. You just don't know. You can't know a person that well in that period of time. Marriage counselors who deal with these problems every day among marriage people generally will say date at least for 2 years to know a person, to know something about them. Growing up in a family of bankers, I was able to learn pretty quickly that a skilled banker doesn't make a loan to a stranger that he does not know. Strangers walk into the bank all the time, and they're putting on their best features and their best presentation, and they have their best story as to why the loan officer ought to write them a loan. A skilled banker will not make a loan to a stranger that he does not know. He does not trust his own judgment that is based on appearances. Now that's just dealing with money. Money is all that is. We're talking about something much more important than that. We're talking about marriage. Religion. Marry someone who is what you are religiously. If you're an atheist, marry an atheist. If you want to have an agreeable marriage. If you're a Roman Catholic, marry a Roman Catholic. If you're a Baptist, marry a Baptist. But if you're a Christian, marry a Christian. And we'll have some more to say about that category in just a minute. Consider their home life. Now, when you think about the home life of someone that you want to spend your life with, you have to look at their parents, because they are offspring from their parents. If you just can't stand anything at all about their father and their mother, what makes you think that you're going to have a successful marriage with one of their children? You just have to think about those things. Many more divorces happen among people whose parents are divorced. The parents can't get along. They don't know how to set an example of proper marriage before their children. And they raise their children, and their children don't know the first thing about being married, because all they've seen all their lives are problems and difficulties and differences and poor judgment and bad choices. And that's all they know. You need to think about that. Do both sets of parents approve of the marriage? And if they don't, what are the reasons that they don't? If you're going to be married to someone where you've got a situation where the son-in-law is forbidden to ever come in their house, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have problems. You must look at their parents. You have to look at their family. Do they get along with their brothers and sisters? That's just a basic question. Can they get along with people? People who are close to them, blood kin. Do they get along with their brothers and sisters? And how do they treat their parents? That's a big key to the puzzle right there. How do they treat their parents? With respect, with honor, with obedience, or disrespect, dishonor, disobedience? How do they treat their parents? And how do they treat their grandparents? That's going to be a big tip-off about what their character is really like, because their character is what you're going to have to deal with if you marry that person. And you're going to be faced with dealing with that the rest of your life. How do they treat other people? Consider their home life. It's so very important. Do we need to say that marriage is for the mature? I think we do. Marriage is for those who are mature in mind. If you're thinking about getting married, you need to think about marrying someone who is old enough to be married. Now, there was a time in this country where people married at much younger ages. Their circumstances were quite drastically different than our circumstances today. Many families contained 12, 14, 16 children. They worked in the fields every day. They worked in the garden every day. They fed the chickens. They gathered the eggs. They grew the crops that they ate. They were industrious. They got along with their siblings. They were trained to sew, to cook, to clean, to take care of the house, to have a relationship with each other. I would say, more than likely, they matured at a younger age than children of our day who know luxury and wealth and things handed to them, and they can tell you how to play all the video games, and they can tell you about the television programs. You know, there's a difference there. There's just a difference. Choose one that is old enough to marry. Teenage marriages are 5 times more likely to fail than marriages among older people. Make sure the person is emotionally mature, not a show-off, not an excuse giver about every little thing that you question them about, every little thing that comes along, not an excuse giver, not loud and boisterous and gotta have my way. You're going to have problems to deal with if that's true in the person you're looking at. Select someone who has some independence about them. And not every little thing that comes up, they will run back to mother or run back to daddy and have them fix it for them. Look for some independence and some intelligence. Look for someone who likes to learn new things, can learn new things, appreciates learning new things, and living, and having relationships and responsibilities, and enjoys caring for children. There may be children in your marriage, and you may be naturally expecting them to help care for the children. If they don't have any concern whatsoever for any children, they may not want to do that. Look for someone who has some long-suffering about them for weaknesses and faults in other people. Because, brace yourself, you have some faults and some weaknesses yourself, don't you? So look for someone who is long-suffering, who will be kind and understanding for your weaknesses and your faults. Look for someone who has mature goals about them. Mature goals. If we're talking about someone who has no knowledge whatsoever about how to boil water, how to cook a hot dog or fry a piece of chicken, no willingness to cook, doesn't care for the house, doesn't have any interest whatsoever in helping a husband, but rather has been used to a life of curling her hair and polishing her nails and listening to music every day, and that's been the lifestyle of that female, that ought to be a red flag. That ought to be a warning to you. That person is not ready. Or the man, the guy, who has had opportunity after opportunity, to learn a trade or learn something to do with his hands that he might be able to provide a living for his family. But he has no interest in training. He has no interest in making a living. He has a disposition that is very difficult for him to hold a job and meet a responsibility. He'd rather spend time playing video games and speeding down the road on his motorcycle and thinking and tinkering around about how to fix an old car. That person's not ready to get married. And you can see things like that in other people. It's important to consider the purpose of marriage. Why would anyone want to get married? What is the purpose of it? The Bible shows us that the purpose of marriage is happiness and companionship in Genesis 2 and verse 18. It's not good for man to be alone. God created a helper for him. She helps him. He loves her. They sacrifice for each other, and they have a good relationship. Two are better than one, according to what Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. And people find happiness and companionship in having a home together for themselves, having their own home. Offspring have to be considered, because usually what happens in marriage is, sooner or later, children come along. And that you have to think about that. Bearing of children in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 15. God's instruction for the very first two who were married was, be fruitful and multiply in Genesis 1 and verse 28. Provide an atmosphere of love where children can be raised according to the will of God would be the ideal way. So bearing children is a purpose of marriage. The prevention of fornication is a purpose of marriage, from 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2. But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. And then in verse 9, but if they do not have self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion, from the 1 Corinthian letter. Hebrews 13 and verse 4, marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled, for fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Marriage is not exclusively for the purpose of satisfaction of the biological urges, but it is a purpose of marriage. And from reading in the Old Testament, it is a love that you have one for another, and you can be exhilarated in that love. See Proverbs 5 and verse 19. Within the confines of marriage, of course. And a seldom thought about point, but one that's very important, is that it provides for spiritual development. From the text that Brother Tommy read for us this morning from Ephesians, it's a good one to read occasionally, whether you're married or single, from Ephesians 5, because that text gives man a model of his relationship with his wife in giving a model of the relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, there's another passage that shows us that marriage provides an experience that will be spiritually beneficial for us, that will help us in our relationship to God. Peter says this in 1 Peter 3, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without the word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. To sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead, for you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. Now that's a great passage. Great admonition from Peter there, just in a little nutshell of a few verses there, but very important about how marriage provides for us the beauty of having experiences that will help us grow spiritually and be what God wants us to be. Marriage is for the mature because children will come along, and you need to discuss that. How many children would you like to have? Would you like to have any children? Where will you live? Problems come up when young people get married and they don't have a place to live. That's just a big problem that you are going to have to deal with, and somebody's going to have to deal with. It may cause problems for other people as well, and those problems might be yours eventually if they're not from the start. Where will you live? What kind of social and recreational activities will you engage in? Are you able to get along? If you spend time with a person and you're contemplating marriage and all you do is fuss and fight, you just better rethink about that. You need to rethink about that very, very carefully. If you're quarreling all the time, that's not good. Someone close to your age might be someone that you could get along with better than someone who is drastically different from your age. And I said we'd come back to this point because it's so very important. Think about the example of Solomon, who built idolatrous altars to various idols, various false gods, all to be tolerant with all of his wives who came from families that didn't worship and serve God in any way whatsoever. And what effect did that have on him? It ended up carrying him away into idolatry and away from God. Someone said a long time ago, a gospel preacher said, about 1961 in a lesson, he said, I wish you wouldn't take offense to this. He said, but here's what he said. There is not a sinner on earth who is good enough to be the companion of a pure, kind, gentle, and loving Christian. Now, there's some truth in that, if you think about it. Really. What kind of life do you want to have? Do you really want to be a Christian? Do you want to go to heaven more than anything else? Then you need to be looking for a mate who has that same desire, who wants to go to heaven more than anything else. Because if you don't, the consequences might be what you are unwilling to bear and unwilling to live with. Is this person really a genuine Christian? You're going to worship together. You need to worship together. You need to serve God together. You need to work together. Read the Lord's Prayer for unity among believers in John 17 and give it some thought when you're thinking about someone that you want to marry who's of a different religious background. If you're religiously divided, then your children are going to be split religiously. They're not going to know which way to choose, and likely they'll choose not something based upon what God's Word says, but something that provide some convenience for them, or least resistance, least amount of difficulty. That could be a problem. And I guess maybe we need to make this point too. If you're looking for someone who is perfect, chances are you'll live your life alone, because there's not anyone that's perfect. Don't look for someone who's perfect, because you won't find them. The only time that our brethren believe in sinless perfection is when they're reading the life of Christ, when they're selecting elders, or when they're looking for a marriage partner. Throw that out. If you're looking for someone who's perfect, you will not find them. They're not there. These are guidelines. These are helpful hints from Heloise, okay? These are something that you need to think about if you're looking for a marriage partner. You have to consider the profound significance of the vow you make at the marriage altar. When you say, I do for life, that's what you do for life. Many view the ceremony as only a legal formality, but the vows of the marriage relationship have far-reaching consequences. God has definite laws and definite instructions about marriage. The consequences, both good and evil, for the bride, for the groom, for the children, for the families, even the community, and even the nation, are things that are profoundly affected by the maintaining of those vows or by the dispensing of those vows. But know this, God hates covenant breaking. And you need to know that from Matthew 2, 13 through 16. Efforts in our country are currently being made to destroy biblical marriage. People do not believe they must obey God. Divorces are easily obtained now. They're advertised in the newspaper, in the media. We'll give you a divorce for $100. It's real cheap now. It's just easily obtained. Standards of sexual morality have been lowered and lowered and lowered and lowered through the years. And it's going to continue to go lower. People are going to act like barnyard animals, and it's going to be thrown in your face. People are allowing other people and other institutions to take over functions of the home. There are so very many factors which can cause failure in marriage. Many people go to the wrong source of information about how to form a marriage, how to build a marriage, how to have a marriage, how to continue their marriage. But your choice of a mate can have eternal consequences. It's very important, so you need to think carefully about it. It will likely be the choice of being happy or being unhappy in this life, but it also has an effect on the life to come. Fortunately, God has blessed us by giving us His Word and showing us in His Word how we can be happy, even if we're married. Isn't that good? God shows us how to be happy at every age. It takes care. You have to care. And it takes prayer. Care and prayer. It takes those things. When two Christians who have a lifestyle that is above reproach select each other as a marriage partner for life, then you see the parents light up. You see their brothers and sisters light up. You see their friends light up. And you see their brethren just delight with smiles. It's a wonderful thing. Truly a wonderful thing. If that's not the case, it can be bad all the way around, not just for you, but for your family and for others. May God bless you. If you're single and you have an intention to be married one day, may God bless you by thinking about some of the things that we've talked about this morning coming from God's Word. If you need help, talk to someone who's been married for a long time. They can give you some insight. They can help you. And they will help you. And there's nobody in the world more agreeable to helping you and more concerned for your welfare than the people that are in this very room. You just mark that down. People that are here love you and care about you and want to see the best for you in your life. They truly do. If you're in our assembly and you need to become a Christian this morning by obeying the gospel of Christ, we stand ready to help you in that this very day. If that's your desire, please come to the front and let it be known while we stand together and encourage you by singing this song.